Hope everyone had a good lunch. And since this is a day of prayer and reflection, I think we'll start our second part. We can all stand. We'll sing Christ is Risen. I'll let you guys lead because I know a different version.
Number of occasions since becoming a priest where I had to serve as a cantor
One time I showed up at a funeral for a deacon, and I knew I was in trouble when I walked in the altar, and the priest said, "Oh good, you're here! You're going to be camping today, okay, good thing." But one of the things with the first part of the talk is that it was very deep. There were a lot of important things about our ministry as cantors that many of us didn't think of, we didn't know, it gave us a new perspective, but also I had one comment during lunch that said, you know, I felt good until I heard your talk. I felt good about being a cantor until I heard you speak, because it adds some weight and some depth to the ministry. And as a priest, I know when I give sermons, a lot of times you speak about things and you are there to remind people who already know and to educate people that don't. And you can give a sermon about any given topic, and sometimes you're preaching to the choir, as they say, you're preaching to people that already know, and sometimes you're informing people for the first time. And so what I want to do in this second part is sort of that reminding those who know and informing those who don't know. I thought about what it means to be a cantor and what I would say if I was a mentor to a cantor, for example. If I had someone that came to me and said, "I want to be a cantor," what would I say as a priest, as someone who served as a cantor? How would I approach that? What would I share? And so what I want to do in this second part is to talk about some of those things that I would share and impart to a new generation of cantors. But also, for the end of that, I would like to get your thoughts and your feelings, your feedback, and give you a chance to share with your fellow cantors some of those things that you find to be helpful, some of those things that you find useful, and ways of encouraging each other and building each other up. St. Paul says, you know, bear one another's burdens. And we don't want it to be a gripe session. We don't want to be complaining, or I don't like this, or I don't like that, or oh, it's terrible. You know, sometimes we need to vent, and that's okay. But to say things that will encourage each other and build each other up and strengthen each other. And so that is what we'll do in this second part of our presentation and reflection today. As I mentioned in the first half, cantorship is a gift of the Holy Spirit. But all gifts need to be cultivated. It's like a seed. Christ told the parable about the seed. Some falls on good soil, some falls on rocky ground, some grows up a little bit and then withers, and so on and so forth. But that seed that we get, that little nugget of cantorship that we receive, we can either keep it where it is, we can not do anything with it, or we can help it grow and strengthen. And so what we need to do is to grow and encourage it and strengthen it and nurture it. Because if we don't, it will die. Now, it isn't for nothing that cantors used to be called professor. My cantor in my parish has been there 42 years, and he's called prof. We call him prof. And even Metropolitan William mentioned that this morning about being called professor. And those old-time cantors put in a lot of time and effort and energy into learning what they needed to learn in order to be good cantors in their parish and in their community. They did what needed to be done. Now, there are different levels of cantorial ability. I think everyone here has a different role in their parish. Some people only cantor occasionally. Some people get off easy and only do Saturday nights. And some people do... Well, I'm not picking on Saturday nights.
But he is faithful.
And he's faithful to Saturday night.
No, as far as all the holy days are concerned.
Oh, the holy days. Yeah. Only on Saturdays or any time? All right. But so we each have different levels. We're at different places in our parish. Some people serve when they're needed. Some people serve all the time. Some people are there day in and day out and every day and every holy day and every funeral and every baptism and wedding. Some people are only there occasionally. But whatever level you are at in your ministry, I think there are a few things that I've identified that can help maintain you to be a good cantor. If you're a good cantor, it can help maintain that in your life. And if you're starting out, it can help build you up and can help make you better. And these are in no particular order, no ranking. These are just my thoughts on what would make a good cantrip. The first one is study. You know, we don't like homework. We figure we're out of school. We don't need to study anymore. And study, I think, is a very important part of what it means to be a cantrip. Especially like those old timers called prof. You need to be able to have that intellectual investment in being a cantrip. There are different skill levels. There are different capabilities, different parochial needs. But we all need to learn and study and read and delve in deeper into this thing we call church music. And there is a certain level of responsibility that you get with that title of cantor. I'm not saying that to make you feel bad or feel like, oh no, I don't want to do more, but this is a way of looking at it to say, I've been given something great, and I need to nurture it and develop it. And study is one of those things. One thing is to brush up on musical stuff. You don't really need too much training in Western music. You don't need to, I was just talking with Jeff before about, you know, how we would do that with cantor students or seminary students, and how much music theory do they need. But you do need a certain level in order to be an effective cantor, especially with music and sheet music and books and so on that are produced. You do need a certain level of musical knowledge, of basic music theory. One thing that I found to be very helpful in seminary is actually a book called How to Read Music. It's a very, very basic, simple text. Not everything in here is applicable, but there are a lot of things in here that are helpful for being a cantor. That way you can sight read to a certain degree and figure out what's what and without necessarily having to hear it. So some basic musical knowledge is necessary. And so that is one aspect of study. Another aspect of study is the learning of liturgical terminology. Every occupation has specific lingo, specific language that you need to know. Whether you are a doctor or a scientist or a mechanic, or you own a grocery store, whatever it is, there are specific terms that you need to know in order to do your job effectively. You need to have that background in order to know what you're talking about. And the same thing with the church. It's difficult when you have somebody that can sing, but they, you know, they're talking to the priest and they're saying, oh yeah, we move that hymn after that other thing that comes after this point, and they don't know the words. They don't know the terms. You have to say, well, you know, the hymn that kind of sounds like that hymn, but not that hymn. And if you know to say, well, this is a trobar, and this is a conduct, and this is a svitilen, and this is an ikos, and this is a canon, and this is a stikira, and they're all different liturgical animals. And you need to know what those are in order to do your job. And so brush up on these things. Get a listing. The great thing is on the internet you can find so much stuff, and especially from the Metropolitan Cantor Institute. I keep referring to it because even with our seminarians, many of them use those resources because they're great resources that are there on the internet. So brush up on your liturgical terminology so that you can talk intelligently with your priest and other cantors and know what's what and what comes when, how it all fits together. It is also helpful to know terms that are Greek in origin as well as Slavonic in origin. Because depending on what book or edition you may have, it may use a slightly different term for something. If one book calls something a svitilen and another calls it an exapostolarian, it's the same thing. Or hymn of light or whatever they're going to call it. You need to kind of know these nuances and differences in liturgical terminology in order to have that kind of well-rounded background in our chant. And it also helps that way when you're trying to learn something new or learn a new service or something like that, to know those terms. And the third thing that I have under study is study of the typikon, the ustav, the order of services. This one is very important because this is really what a cantor and the priest really have to collaborate on very closely together, of making sure that we know what goes when, what goes where, how we sing that, especially times like we just got through Holy Week. And there's all sorts of changes and differences and things that happen. And we need to have that background in the structure of services, the basic structure, and then what gets plugged in where and how that all fits together, how different parts, different seasons, different times of the year, how the Mineum or the calendar year, if you will, interplays with the Triodion, the Pentecostarian, and how all these different layers of the services kind of dance together, if you will, and form the beauty that is the services of the church. So, knowing that and having that background in the structure of the services in the typikon is very, very crucial. The next thing that I've identified is practice. Occasionally, you will find yourself having to do something on the fly. It happens. You mentioned a 15-minute warning for a funeral. That sort of thing happens. Sometimes it's just, you just have to roll with it and go and do the best you can. But under normal circumstances, take time to practice. Take time to look over music. Take time to look over the services. It doesn't have to be much. 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, can do go a long way in showing that you have prepared and you put the time in and the effort in to know what needs to be done. So whether it's new music or more complex music, different services, take that time to review and practice. Certain things, even if you do them all the time, even if you think you know Resurrection Matins front and back and you can do it on top of your head, closed with your eyes closed, take that time before Holy Week. Take that time before Resurrection Matins and review it. Or Good Friday Vespers, or whatever. Just take a few moments to really look at that, especially when there's different melodies. You might be able to sing Plotiu in your sleep, but just look over it once, just to make sure you've got it down, and you will do it well. Because as we said before, that shows in the services and it adds to the beauty so that when people are there, they go, wow, I am in the kingdom of God. I'm not in some other place. Take that time. Also before baptisms, weddings, funerals, times when there are people in the church who are not usually exposed to, people outside the normal faithful that are going to be there regardless. People that are coming in from the outside, people who have no experience of church, of Christianity, of God, who don't know anything about that, they'll be there for a wedding. And your ministry, your presentation of our music goes a long way to introduce them to the church, to God. And maybe it will plant a seed in them that will bear fruit, and maybe they'll come to your church and say, that was a beautiful service. I want to have that relationship with God that you people have. So take that time to practice. One thing that I do, and I still find myself doing, is I sing all the time. Much to my wife's chagrin, I'm singing all the time. She always complains, she says, you're not even really singing in English. I don't know what you're singing, but you're singing something. And make our chant a part of your life. If you're in the shower, you're driving in the car, be humming, singing. Have it in your head. Make it really a part of your daily life. Because then it's second nature. When you're up there in the loft and you're standing in the front pew or wherever you sing from in your parish, it's just part of who you are as a person. And you'll be surprised at how much you can remember. How much just gets implanted in your brain. Our brains have a wonderful way of remembering music. I can remember long, complex musical phrases from our chant. Some of the Irmi for feast days. I can remember, I don't know how I know it, but I can remember long phrases of notes. And then when I get there in church, I'm set, I'm golden. I know how to sing it because I'm singing it, most of the year because I'm doing it as I'm, doing the laundry or mowing the lawn or whatever. So make that practice and that singing a part of your day-to-day life. One thing that I do think is important, some cantors agree, some disagree, but I think that it's important for us in our churches to learn Slavonic. and even to read Cyrillic. The reason for that, in my estimation, is that it really makes you a well-rounded cantor. You may never use it in your parish. You may not sing anything aside from Vishnaya Pamyata, Mohayalika, Christosvaskes. You may not sing a liturgy in Slavonic ever. But you knowing it adds something to your practice of the chant. And it really helps. And you'll be surprised. You know, maybe your priest right now doesn't do it, but maybe the next one, hey, let's do a liturgy in Slavonic sometime. Or let's sing Yechenu Avim, you know. We haven't sung that in a while. It helps. It really does. And it also opens up to you a wider treasury of liturgical music. So I think it's important to learn Slavonic. I share that with a lot of my friends in seminary. We have courses in Slavonic, but it's very, very useful. And who knows, if you're traveling, if you go abroad, it is something that connects you to a wider world than just your own church, your own parish, or your own diocese. So definitely I would encourage you to learn Slavonic. Again, even if you never use it in a parish setting under normal circumstances. And relating to that, there is a world of chant that's out there. In our Carpatho-Rusyn liturgical tradition, we represent one subset of one type of chant in one part of the world. There's so much that's out there, even within our own tradition. So let's say you've learned everything about X, then you can move on to Y. You know Y? Move on to Z. Let's say you've got Bokshai's Prostopinia memorized in Slavonic and Hungarian. Well, you can go on to other stuff. There's tons of other stuff to broaden your horizons, to open up your knowledge. You can never really exhaust it. There's so much music that's out there. There's so much that can help you in learning more about what it is that we do. Even if it's outside of our frame of reference or our practice, it can help make you a better cantor because you're aware of how things sound, how other people in the Eastern Christian world sing, for example. Hearing examples of Byzantine chant or Russian choir music or something, these things can help us because we know something a little bit about other people. We learn something about their tradition and how that relates to our own tradition. And so I would encourage you, especially these days, where you can find so much on the internet, just go on YouTube and put in something like Byzantine chant, see what you get. You spend days just listening to what's out there, and that's free. So use the tools that we have in order to learn a little bit about other people in this wide world of chant that's out there. I think it's important for cantors as well to develop a library. It's another thing my wife kind of doesn't necessarily like. But I think it's necessary for cantors to collect books, music, digital files, if you have access to that, to start getting a collection of works so that you have them readily available. That you have the books that you need to do your ministry. These are the tools, the resources that you have. And so it's good to start getting them, collecting them, ordering them, having them available, looking through them, being familiar with them. You know, you should have copies of a Manaean and a Triodian and a Pentecostarian and Vespers and that. You should have all these things readily available. And also have books of music. Have them in Slavonic, have them in English. Sometimes churches also get rid of obsolete, older texts. And while you may not use it, collect these things, use them. Your priest may say, yeah, we don't need that. Yeah, here's an extra copy of a Vespers book. Here's an extra copy of an old, you know, Grigashi Holy Week book that we don't use anymore. But have it, because these things are useful. And to start developing that library, there's so many materials, there's so much that is available now, and thank God for that, especially in English, from all different sources. Orthodox sources, Eastern Catholic sources, you know. There's wonderful books that are available, wonderful things for you to grow your library with. So use that and have them available so that you're not scrambling You're not scrambling at the last minute to try to find something that you need. So have those things and develop that library. Years ago, there was a priest that I'm very close to, and we were having a discussion about clerical dress, and he shared with me, he said, priests need to have, depending on the way they dress, a sense of situational awareness. Situational awareness. You need to know what's the right way to dress for a certain thing. Sometimes, in the Orthodox world, priests have these discussions. You know, should I dress like this all the time? You know, like when I go to Giant Eagle, should I be like this? Or should I be in a collar? Or should I be in a polo shirt? You know. And his opinion was, you dress different times. Sometimes you need to look like a priest. Sometimes you can wear a collar if you're going to dinner or something. Sometimes you can, if you're going with your family to the mall or to see a movie, you know, go in jeans and a polo shirt. No one's going to care. That sense of situational awareness is something that cantors need to have. Not about dress. But cantors need to be able to tailor themselves to various situations and locations. So for example, the voice that you would use to sing in this cathedral, the voice, how you would project, how you would sing and speak, is going to be different than if you go to that chapel over there. You're going to use a different voice. You don't use the same voice to sing in that chapel in this cathedral. One way has to project and carry, another way it might be a little more intimate and subdued. You need to know that. You need to know how big the church is. You know, sometimes your church might be bigger, smaller. If you're in a chapel, you're in a different situation. You're at a nursing home with your priest doing a service for shut-ins at a nursing home. Different types of voice. You have to have that situational awareness. Sometimes you might need a more elaborate setting of something. And that's fine in a certain circumstance. Sometimes the liturgy has to be a little more simple and subdued and quiet. And you need to know when to do that, and, you know, when to push, when not to push. Different services have different feels, if you will. And that's also an aspect of situational awareness that you need to have. So we know that St. John of Damascus wrote a number of hymns that we sing at the funeral, and he wrote the canon for Resurrection Matins, the Paschal canon. If you have a good sense of situational awareness, you know that those funeral hymns and that canon of Pascha shouldn't sound the same. If you're singing the Paschal canon, it shouldn't sound like those funeral hymns, and vice versa. They have a different sound, a different feel, and you need to know how to get that feeling. How if you're at the Resurrection Matins and you're happy and joyful and you're singing and you're moving and all that, and you want to have that sense of joy, it's going to be a little bit different than the more somber way you sing the hymns at a funeral. They shouldn't sound the same, even though sometimes I've heard it or they do sound the same. So there's a different manner of execution and sound that you need to hone in on and develop. And you also need to know as a cantor, there are times when you need to push. And you need to push people along or pull them along. People are singing slow and you want to know, we got to pick up the pace here. And there's a time when you have to push and you need to get them going. And then there's a time when you as a cantor, if people are starting, we talked about Resurrection Matins here, we'll keep going with that analogy. People are starting and they're going, Christos, Christos, Christos. And you know, they got that kind of very slow, and they're all singing, they're singing their hearts out, and you want to go faster, and you say, nah, let them be. Let them sing. And you let them do that. So you have to know when the right time, when you have the right time to really get them going, and you have to pull them along and kind of assert your cantorial authority and say, I'm the cantor and I'm going to set the pace. And when you let the people do it. You need to know when to happen. And I think you need that sense in order to be a good cantor. Sometimes cantors can develop maybe a little bit of pride, not good pride, bad pride, sense of ego, I'm the cantor. And I don't want help. I don't need help. I don't need other people. You don't have to point fingers, it's over. You can point fingers at yourself, you know. We always say, if you look at our own sins, you know, not our brother or sister. But sometimes we get that way. I'm the cantor, I can do it. But what's important for us as cantors is to involve other people as is appropriate, as is necessary. I think those of you here today who are sort of mentoring with an elder cantor know that it's good to have help. It's good to involve other people. Now, sometimes if you get somebody who's really eager and they think they know too much and they may not know and things can get out of whack, but to really have that sense of bringing people into that, because you can help train new cantors. You can help in that training process, in passing along this tradition. And you do so by involving other people. And it's also very helpful on a practical level if you have other people that you are involving. You know, you don't have to read every single reading. You don't have to do every single psalm or every single response. You can, if it's simple, yeah, you lead that one. Saves your voice, especially during times like Holy Week when there's a lot of services. If you have that help, use it. Involve people, especially younger people, kids in their teens. Get them involved. Because this is how our chant has passed along all these years, by involving people. And one of the worst things that happens is when you have a cantor who's a really good cantor in a parish and is doing everything, and the cantor gets sick. Or the cantor dies. And then there's chaos. Because nobody knows, I don't know how to do it. Prof always did everything. I don't have to do it. And now, you're stuck. And you don't know what to do. People don't know where to go or how to sing. And the priest is left trying to sing himself while he's serving. And it's not good. So it's good to have that sort of broader aspect of cantorship. One thing that you'll see in like the Greek tradition is they have a term they call protopsaltis. Basically means proto-cantor, the first cantor. And if you have a big parish, you'll have this protopsaltis, who's like the main cantor. And then you've got other cantors who are sort of auxiliary cantors who know the stuff, but maybe they do a lot of weekday services or they help out at these times. But you have the main cantor who's really the one that sort of sets the tone and guides everyone, but others are involved. So if you are in a position to involve others in that ministry, do so. It's really, really important, and it's important for you as well in order to preserve your own voice and to preserve your own sanity sometimes. And relating to this, those who are younger cantors, junior cantors, new cantors, it's important to talk to your elders. Our chant tradition was something that was passed on from cantor to cantor. And it's a tradition in the true sense of the word. Traditio means to pass something on, to hand something on. And our music is the same way. And that sort of ministry of cantor is the same way. If you see someone who promised, you need to pass it on. But if you're in that role of someone who has received it, it's good to talk to other cantors. Talk to elder cantors, senior cantors, proto-cantors. And to round out your knowledge. So while I mentioned before the importance of study, the importance of looking in sources and texts and knowing Slavonic and all this, it's important at the same time to talk to real cantors, to see what they suggest, to see what they do. How do you do it? How do you sing this? How do you sing that? What's the sort of feel that you get? Or, you know, what did you get from the cantors that were before you? And this way the tradition continues and there's no rupture in that tradition. So live contact with actual cantors is important. But also, in a more contemporary way, there's so much out there now on the internet that you can also have contact with how things are being done in Europe. I'm amazed at how much is out there, how much Proslopedia is out there, recorded, and gives us a glimpse into what's being done there now, and helps us know the tradition as well. Just as an example, my wife will tell you that I'm addicted to YouTube. It's probably true. But the Eparchy of Munkacsiko, the Greek Catholic Eparchy of Munkacsiko, has a great YouTube channel.
And they have entire liturgies, services, Holy Week service, everything you could imagine on their website or on YouTube. And you can watch it and listen and hear how it's done and hear how people sing certain things. And it gives you a good way to know what's being done in Europe and also how that can inform what we're doing here. Might not be the same how it pans out in the end, but it gives us a well-rounded view and helps the kind of junior churches in America look to our elders in the old country to kind of get a better view of that. So working with actual cantors and also virtual cantors is very important. It's also very critical as a cantor to work with your priest. And I say that now having been a cantor and not being a priest, that years ago, the cantor was like the right-hand man of the priest. And usually was a man. Sorry, ladies. Years ago it was. But today, you know, the right-hand person, the person at the right hand of the priest. The liturgy cannot be done by the priest alone. Shouldn't be. Priest can't just come in and do the liturgy. He needs someone else. Christ said in the Gospels, he said, you know, where two or three are gathered in my name, I am in the midst of them. And sometimes that evangelical precept is carried out by the priest and the cantor as the only two people there. Christ is present because of those two people. You need to be the helper and the assistant and the person who works well with your priest. We talked before about cantorship being a charismatic ministry, a gift of the Spirit. But because of that, it is in some ways under the authority of the ordained ministry, under the authority of the priest, which means that you need to work closely with him, you need to work together, you need to be attentive to his needs, and it means the buck stops with him. If he tells you to do something that you don't like, you can talk about it. Hopefully, if you have a reasonable priest, you can talk about it, discuss it, and go back and forth, and you know, enjoy a cup of coffee and talk about it. But at the end of the day, if he says, I want you to sing this, you need to sing it. If he says, don't sing this, don't sing it. I remember in seminary, we had, in our diocesan pew book, we have a particular rendition of the Lord's Prayer. And it's kind of strange, in my estimation, because it repeats the phrase, Our Father, after every line. It's sort of like, you know, Our Father, who art in heaven, Our Father, hallowed be thy name, Our Father, something like that. And the prefect of our seminary hated it. Basically said, you are never to sing that when I'm serving liturgy. And we were meeting cantors at the seminary. We said, all right, Father, you got it. I'm not going to sing that. And we knew that if we wanted to get mad, we'd sing that Lord's Prayer. You know? But no, on a serious note, though, if your priest says, I don't want you to sing this, I want you to sing this, I want you to do this, or not this, or whatever, you need to be attentive to that and to follow that. And we all have personal preferences as cantors. We all have things we like or we don't like. We have particular settings of things that we like or we don't like, or particular ways of singing something. But we are in that position where we must follow the instructions of the priest. And so, while we can discuss and talk and reason together, the buck stops with him. And we need to be aware of that, because sometimes it causes tensions in a parish. If the cantor, you know, is kind of doing his or her own thing, and the priest gets frustrated because he said, I told you to do this, or I told you not to do this, and it creates unnecessary tension. So we need to respect that even though we have that role as cantor of guiding the liturgical music, it's all under the presidency and the leadership and the guidance of the priest, who is the one who is in charge of the whole liturgical assembly. And we need to respect that role, his role. And in turn, if we respect his role, he will respect our role as well as cantor. And finally, as we said before about cantor being a model of holiness, as a cantor, you need to have a prayer life. This is something priests, we love talking about prayer life. You know, we always say, you need to pray. Because a lot of people, it happens very frequently that we fall away from prayer. And sometimes, especially, even in ministry, you'll be surprised, priests and so on, who will say, I don't pray much, or I have a hard time praying. Because I feel so busy, on Sunday morning, I've got so much going on, I can't pray. All of us who are in this particular ministry of cantor, but also anyone who is in any sort of type of ecclesiastical ministry, must have that prayer life, that private prayer, in order to add a certain dimension to public prayer. We need both. It doesn't have to be much. As I always tell people, our prayer life, our private prayer life, it could just be a few minutes in the morning, a few minutes at night. It could be simply saying the Lord's Prayer and a couple other prayers in the morning before we go to work, and closing the day with a few prayers. But we need those two bookends to our day. We need to have our day sandwiched, if you will, by prayer in order to have it affect the rest of our day. And the same thing with our services. We need to have that private prayer coming before our Lord privately, so that when we come before Him, before everyone else, in the midst of the church, that we can have that sense of doing this as an offering to God. Now, relating to this as well, sometimes we need to pray privately. We need to have that close connection to God within our souls privately. Because when we are singing, when we are in the role of cantor, we don't get a lot of chances to pray sometimes. We will be there singing and worrying about what's coming next and what we need to sing and how things are sounding and all sorts of different aspects of our ministry that we can't just close our eyes and get in the mood of prayer. If someone sitting down here, they don't sing, whatever, they're in their own little world or they're communing with God, it's not going to matter. But the priest can't do that. The cantor can't do that. The altar boys can't do that. Our ministry of prayer, a lot of times, is to do the work. Liturgy means, the work of the people, and this is the work that we are entrusted with and have to do. So, because our prayer is different publicly, we really have the necessity to develop a rule of prayer, a life of prayer, in our homes and in our hearts, so that what we do in the church reflects what's going on inside of us, and vice versa, that what we do in the church impacts us, and that we don't just become burnt out or negative or whatever about what we do as campers. So we must be able to do that, enter into an interior life, so that the exterior life can show that, and that we're not just doing a job, but we're doing something where we are doing a ministry in the full sense of the word. Just as in our ascent to God, in our private life, in our goal of communion with God, and our relationship with God, we can never exhaust it. We can never reach the pinnacle. If we're, some of the saints of our church use the analogy of going up a mountain. St. Gregory of Nyssa likes this one, talking about Moses going up Mount Sinai. It's the same way. We're going up a mountain to God. And it's not like you can reach the top of the mountain and just be like, hey, God, I reached you. I'm done. No. You go up the mountain, you encounter God, and you discover there's more. There's like a whole other mountain, and you climb that one, and you reach more, and so on. You encounter the depth of God in our spiritual life. We encounter God as a depth, as almost a vast ocean. It's limitless. We can't. God has no limits, and so our encounter with Him has no limits. And in a similar way, too, our ministry of cantor, it can just keep growing and going and going. There's never a point where you can say, I know everything, I'm done, I don't know anything else, or I don't need to know anything else, I'm set. There's always more to learn. There's always more to encounter. Always more to engage. There's always more to explore. So, as you go forward in your ministry, enter into the prayer, enter into your prayer life, and keep learning, keep researching, keep studying, keep talking to people, keep those lines of communication with other cantors open, keep visiting other churches, and always be a student, always learn, and always have a love for the services and for our tradition.